Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome everyone to another episode of The Damage Report in this big abandoned echoey building. A day of breaking news, scary news, honestly, although thankfully it could have ended a lot worse, and we'll get to that very soon. I'm very excited though also today to be joined once again on the program by writer and vlogger Yasmin Aliyah Khan. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, John. Good to be back. Very excited to be here.
Good to have you here. Very excited to have you here to respond to that VP debate last night. I know that you watched that, so apologies for you having to do that. But we have a few different segments of that I know we're going to want to respond to. So glad to have you here.
Yeah. I did watch the debate. I didn't watch the presidential debate. And that was very intentional and very deliberate. I did a whole rundown on why I didn't watch it, but I did watch the VP debate and it was painful. It sucked.
Yeah.
But we gotta talk about it.
We do. I just wanna briefly mention one other thing, because you're located in Texas right now. You live in Texas, correct?
I do, yes. Houston.
So I used to live, you live in Houston, yeah. So I used to live in Austin, and I just wanna say, I know we can't devote a lot of time to it, but the voter suppression that is going on in Texas right now is insane. I don't know if you saw the video of the line of cars waiting to drop off their ballots at the one collection spot in Harris County. Did you see that?
I didn't see the video, but I've been talking about this a lot lately because it is a really big problem. Governor Abbott of Texas, he gave us more early voting dates, right? So he extended our early voting period to start October 13th, so next week. And the Texas GOP, they sued him. They took him to the Texas Supreme Court for doing that. So there was no reason for them to do that besides that they wanted to suppress more votes. Additionally, what they did was we had all these ballot boxes set up because the Democrats were saying, you know, if you're worried about COVID, then go and, you know, take your mail-in ballot and just deliver it directly to the ballot box, right? Because they also slowed down the USPS, right? So what they started doing was they set up all these ballot boxes all over Houston. And then Governor Abbott was like, only one per county. It doesn't matter how big the county is. Houston, we have almost 5 million people in Harris County, which encompasses the majority of Houston. So it's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense, but.
It does. Well, I mean, but it does though. Like, you would do this if you don't want people to vote.
Yeah, it's
and the GOP has been very clear about their views of democracy recently, as we'll get to soon.
Almost impressive just how blatant and just obnoxious they are about all their voter efforts or voter suppression efforts. They're not even hiding it anymore. They're not even trying to pretend like this is a fair thing that they're doing. So
exactly. And look, you know, my heart goes out to them. Like, they sort of supported democracy back when the number of white supremacists outnumbered the number of non-white supremacists. But as that number starts to go against them, they've lost interest in popular democracy. It's sort of predictable, honestly. Yeah. I'm seeing some comments in the chat asking for what my shirt says, because when the top part of a shirt says legalize, it could go in a lot of different directions.
Yeah.
But this is appropriately legalize voting. It's supposed to be one of our rights. Maybe someday it will be once again. But very excited to have you here. There's a lot that we're gonna be talking about. For those who are already watching, whether on YouTube or on Twitch, and there's a lot of you, please hit the like button, share the stream, let as many people as possible know that we're active. If you send us comments, tweets, super chats, and things like that, both Yasmin and myself will be responding as we go. And I did wanna just quickly update you on one thing. Actually, two things we'll say before we launch into the news. Oh my God, they've put a lot of reads in here. I'm gonna get to some of them eventually. Everybody's been asking for a Damage Report shirt, and the Shop TYT gods have finally heard our pleas. And so there is one there. If you go to shoptyt.com, there is a Damage Report shirt. And we also found out after I threw down a gauntlet on the main show yesterday, they picked it up and then re-threw it down. If we sell over 100 of those shirts by this Friday, by Monday, they are gonna give us another TDR shirt, possibly with a dragon on it. So very excited about that possibility. So if you're interested in repping the Damage Report, go to shoptyt.com and you can do that. And with that, Yasmin, how would you like to talk about some news?
Yeah, let's do it.
Breaking news this morning, a group was apparently planning to kidnap the governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer. Now, a lot of people are saying that this is a militia plot. I even tweeted that it's a militia plot, but I was thankfully reminded by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez that the word militia is really just PR for white supremacist domestic terrorists. It's just a gang. That's all it is. They're terrorists who wanted to kidnap and possibly kill a governor as they overthrew a state government. And it's not my job to do PR for them. So if I accidentally say the word militia at some point outside of the graphics that have it, I apologize for that. Militias don't exist. Just because you're white doesn't mean that the gang you're in is anything other than a gang. So let's just say that. But the FBI says that it has thwarted what it described as a plot to violently overthrow the government and kidnap Gretchen Whitmer. The alleged plot involves reaching out to members of a Michigan militia, this is their word, according to a federal affidavit filed Thursday. The people involved in this have all been named. You can see that in this next graphic. We don't know anything more specifically about them, but judging by the names, you get an idea of what sort of thing this was. Several of the members there talked about murdering tyrants or taking a sitting governor, according to an FBI agent. The group decided they needed to increase their numbers and encouraged each other to talk to their neighbors and spread their message. One in particular, Adam Fox, referred to Governor Whitmer as this tyrant and said, "I don't know, boys, we gotta do something. You guys link with me on our other location system. Give me some ideas of what we can do." And then it goes into sovereign citizen stuff, talking about creating a society that follows the US Bill of Rights and where they could be self-sufficient, blah, blah, blah. You know, that sort of thing that you've seen before. So Yasmin, we've got some more details from the affidavit, but this is fairly new news to both of us. What do you think about this?
I know that we're going to touch on this later on as we discuss the vice presidential debate from last night, but it just goes to show just, you know, and I am really hesitant to call people sexist or to call out sexism. I try to give people the benefit of the doubt when and where I can, but it's just, it's so obviously sexist, you know? It's fear of a democratic, powerful woman, and she really is doing a lot of good for her state, or she's trying to at the very least. And the things that she has to put up with is really, it's obstructionist, it's disheartening, it's terrifying, it's really scary.
Yeah.
So
it really is. You're 100% right. If I were her or a member of her family, you know, I would be terrified by this, but probably not 100% shocked. Because she has been vilified by right-wing media, by the president himself for some time. Actually, you know what? Let's jump ahead. So I want you to have one thing in your mind as we're going through some of the details of what this terrorist organization wanted to do. And that is that on April 17th, just a few weeks into the lockdown, as some states were being responsible, including Michigan, Whitmer actually cared whether her constituents lived or died. So she did shut down the state. Anti-lockdown protests began, and they received a boost from the president, who tweeted things like "Liberate Michigan" in all caps. And I guess some people were listening, and I guess some people decided they did need to liberate Michigan, potentially by overthrowing the state government and kidnapping and then killing the governor. Will Trump answer for this? Probably not. He won't be made to. But I'm not going to forget about the fact that he called on people in that state to do something about their governor. And when you talk about this woman as a tyrant, and that word gets thrown around on Fox News month after month after month, can you really be shocked when some people decide that she is in fact a tyrant and they need to do something about it? It sort of seems obvious at some point, Yasmin.
It's the hypocrisy for me, John. It's just, he's the law and order candidate, he's the law and order president, but that's not what any of this is. Law and order does not include vigilante kidnappings of governors, you know? It's just not a part of it. He definitely will not condone it. He won't condemn it. He definitely won't say anything against them. I don't think anyone is expecting him to at this point, and if they are, I don't understand why. I have no idea why.
Exactly. Well, he doesn't have time to. He's got to go on another long rant about how Antifa members are buying too many cans of Bumblebee tuna and then they're winging them at cops or something like that.
Yeah.
Not a lot of Antifa plots to kidnap Republican governors, I've noticed.
Yeah, they're not really into killing people, are they?
No, no, despite all the rumors, they don't seem to. So let's talk a little bit about this affidavit. It's available. If you want to go online and find out all the details, you can. I just want to mention a few things that popped out to me. July 11th, remember, this is after his tweet. A group of them get together to start to create IEDs, you know, the things that are used to kill our soldiers in Iraq. These terrorists are trying to make them in America. Thankfully, their attempt to make one of these bombs totally failed. Because remember, while these people are radical and violent and all of that, they tend to be absolute morons. But one of the members did have a rifle with a silencer that they brought to their firing combat practice drills. So potentially a tool you could use to assassinate someone. They apparently decided that kidnapping Gretchen Whitmer as she entered or leaves her vacation home would probably be the safest thing to do. They were going to grab her, remove her to a secure location in Wisconsin, and then put her on trial. These random terrorists are gonna put her on trial. I wonder how that would go. I wonder how fair that would be. I wonder what the penalty would be when they find her guilty. I wonder. And I can't go through a lot of the comments of what they said because it's laced with obscenities and things like that. But yeah, they had thought about this for months. They'd been coordinating about how to do it. Thankfully, the FBI did their job and stopped it before this happened. And Gretchen Whitmer had already had to have additional security put in place at her residence because this is not the first threat against her. But this is insane. This deserves to be news for a week, but it's 2020, so it won't be.
Yeah, I think it's really surprising how people still think that people won't be able to get away with certain things, or that they won't, that's so ridiculous. There's no way that that's gonna go through. But really, I mean, it took an FBI probe to out this and to stop all of it and to thwart it. Now, these people, they're empowered, they have resources available to them, and there are even less barriers to whatever they're trying to accomplish than there were before. So these people are legit and they need to be a concern for most people.
Exactly. Yeah. And we're gonna move on in a moment because unfortunately so much crazy stuff happens that we are forced to. But in theory, if the president being so irresponsible that he infects himself with COVID despite being better protected than any human on the face of the earth hadn't overwhelmed the news, the media might be able to sort of tie together two events from the last week. One, the president at a debate telling a group like the Proud Boys to stand back and stand by for what they might have to do. And then a militia, these violent extremists planning to take out a governor. That's a week apart, basically, those two things happened. But look, this is gonna get talked about, I guess, for today. But are we gonna draw the connection between those two things? The president giving a wink and a nod to these extremist groups and then them doing things like this? Probably not. Probably not.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
The takeaway that most people are gonna have from last night's VP debate is that, hey, a fly landed on Mike Pence's head, and I get it, it's very funny. I tweeted about it too, but if not for insects being naturally attracted to Mike Pence, what should have been the big takeaway from last night? I think it should be one thing that has been buttressed and strengthened by other Republican statements since that debate. And that thing is Mike Pence and this answer.
President Trump has several times refused to commit himself to a peaceful transfer of power after the election. If Vice President Biden is declared the winner and President Trump refuses to accept a peaceful transfer of power, what would be your role and responsibility as vice president? What would you personally do? You have 2 minutes.
Well, Susan, first and foremost, I think we're going to win this election. Because while Joe Biden and Kamala Harris rattle off a long litany of the establishment in Washington, D.C., an establishment that Joe Biden's been a part of for 47 years, President Donald Trump has launched a movement of everyday Americans from every walk of life. But when you talk about accepting the outcome of the election, I must tell you, Senator, your party has spent the last 3.5 years trying to overturn the results of the last election.
Okay, so there was a little bit more to it, but none of the other stuff that was to it answered either the question or the concerns that many Americans have that Donald Trump is planning something to overthrow the will of the people. Mike Pence is supposed to be the responsible guy in the room that could hypothetically stop him from doing that. He was given the opportunity to reassure us that he would stand by the Constitution, he would stand by our system, he would stand by democracy, and he declined that opportunity, Yasmin.
Yeah, that was kind of a recurring theme from last night, wasn't it? And you touched on something that I do want to talk about. Mike Pence is, people think that he's nicer or that he's easier to work with because he's quiet. You know, before last night, I could barely even remember what his voice sounded like. And then I remembered, and then I remember that everything that he says it more calmly, less obnoxiously than Donald Trump, but it's just as bad in a lot of ways, if not worse in some ways. And I'm not surprised that he denied it because, I mean, at this point, it's very obvious what they're trying to do. And it's not just recently, they've been laying a lot of this groundwork for years, you know, from packing the courts across the entire country, not just the Supreme Court, even though the Supreme Court, we're not in a great position there either, you know. So it's not surprising, or it shouldn't be surprising to anyone. Of course, he didn't answer the question. He didn't like answering a lot of questions last night. I don't know. I feel like Kamala Harris had a lot and nothing to work with.
Yeah, he dodged every question. Not really surprised by that. It's a debate. He's a politician. That's what they do. But this, I think, rises above. This is a special thing. We want to know that the system that we've had, as many flaws as it's had since its inception, the cracks in it that have been put there ever since then, that we will still be able to count on a peaceful transition of power by what the Constitution demands. And he's saying we're not necessarily gonna have that, or he's not going to step in to make sure that it's the case. And it's not just him. As that debate was going on, Senator Mike Lee, Republican, tweeted, "We're not a democracy." That's awesome. That's great from a senator saying, "Hey, everybody, we're not a democracy." Now, is he technically correct? They'll say it'll be unbearable, but they'll say, "Well, technically, we're like a republic, a representative democracy, but with Republican aspects to it." Okay, sure. And they'd be totally fine with Barack Obama saying in a speech that we're not a democracy. But he did elaborate because that obviously got a lot of pushback, saying democracy isn't the objective. Liberty, peace, and prosperity is. I think he means prosperity, giving him more credit than he deserves. We want the human condition to flourish. Rank democracy can thwart that. Now, he's using the word rank. What he means is democracy. He means the votes determining the winner can thwart what he thinks prosperity is. But this is Donald Trump. This is so many of them. Democracy doesn't work for a party that can't win elections based on getting more people to vote for them than their opponents. And when that happens time after time, maybe you turn against democracy and maybe you look for something else. Maybe you look for some alternative to democracy that can lock in white minority rule for just a couple more decades, give them the Supreme Court, give them their tax cuts, and they can continue to benefit from a system that they have rigged all along the way. That's what it looks like to me, at least.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting his choice of words, a ranked democracy. At first, I thought he was talking about ranked choice on ballots. And I was like, oh, that's interesting coming from a Republican. But then it's like, Donald Trump didn't even win the popular vote. So whatever you're advocating for, it's not in Trump's best interest, you know? Unless, of course, you pack all the courts and then you suppress the votes and then you gerrymander, et cetera, all the things that have been happening.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so we had Pence saying, you know what, whatever happens, it is what it is on election day and afterward. If Trump wants to take it, I'm not going to stop. And we've got a senator saying, hey, everybody, we're not a democracy. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying that if they pulled off their plan to have a state legislature controlled by Republicans give the electoral votes to a Republican rather than the Democrat that won the vote, hey, we're not actually a democracy. Don't get mad, everybody. We're something else. And then you have the big man himself this morning, Donald Trump, calling, I believe it's Maria Bartiromo, and saying this about his political opponents.
No, we're going to get little satisfaction unless I win, and we'll just have to go because I won't forget it. But these people should be indicted. This was the greatest political crime in the history of our country. And that includes Obama and it includes Biden. These are people that spied in my campaign. And we have everything.
Okay, so he thinks that all of these people, past opponents, people like Obama, Hillary Clinton too, because of course, lock her up, why not? But Biden too, Barr, the lead law enforcement officer in our entire country, needs to lock up the guy running against him in this election. Now, this is not the first time that he said that. It's certainly not a power move. It's not giving me a lot of confidence that you think you're going to win this thing, that you're telling the AG that no, you got to go and you got to arrest this guy. But this is the president, and this isn't even going to be news. Honestly, how many people are going to talk about this? The fact that the president called into a major news network and said, I want the AG to lock up my opponent because it's Trump. We're just like, he does it all the time. What a goof. He's a goof, you know? But I think it's kind of important. I think it's kind of a big thing.
Yeah, I thought it was a fun throwback to 2016 when he kept trying to lock up Hillary Clinton. You know, I was like, oh, that's cute. I see what you did there. You know, but really, it's in the grand scheme of everything we've been dealing with, it's nothing new, but it's also very, very bad. And the difference is in 2015, 16, he wasn't empowered with the federal government behind him and an attorney general who literally just does his bidding and doesn't even really deny that at this point. So it is something to be concerned with, and it's not something to be ignored. But at the same time, I mean, we got to move on too. You know, we have other stuff to talk about. That's the problem.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you're 100% right. And I'm glad that you pointed out that this is different than 2016. In 2016, the conversation was Trump saying he might not accept the results. And look, you want, you know, both parties to accept that the result was valid. But the worry wasn't that Trump wasn't going to accept the results and he was going to march into the White House and become president. It was a thing about rhetoric and messaging. As Yasmin very appropriately points out, they're in power now. This is not the same thing. Mike Pence and Donald Trump, they can't technically just declare that they get to remain president for life, but they certainly have a stronger vantage point from which to try to do that. And I just want everyone to bear that in mind. We're going to move on to other topics. But understand that them all agreeing that this is not a real democracy, Trump gets to decide if he leaves or not, that is sort of a big deal. This is not just some sort of weird hypothetical. They're prepping to do something and everyone needs to be ready. Kamala Harris and Mike Pence couldn't necessarily agree on a lot at the debate last night, but they did both seem to agree on one thing, and that is that fracking needs to go, and it certainly doesn't need to be banned. Here is Kamala Harris repeating that about Joe Biden.
Well, I will repeat, and the American people know, that Joe Biden will not ban fracking. That is a fact. That is a fact.
Okay, Yasmin. So she wants to assure us he's not going to ban fracking. Obviously, Donald Trump and Mike Pence aren't going to ban fracking. So it looks like, unfortunately, two candidates, one position.
Yeah. I live in Texas, as we've discussed, and fracking is something that I think about quite a lot. And it's actually a really big part of this November election, especially for Texans, whether or not they realize it or not. There's a position in the Texas state government called the Texas Railroad Commissioner. It has nothing to do with railroads, it's all about energy. And this person is one of the most, if not the most highest ranking energy official in Texas. Why does that matter? Because Texas is the reason why the United States is now energy independent, or one of the reasons. And a big part of that is fracking. So whatever Texas decides going forward, as far as this issue is concerned, will have national implications as well as implications regarding our foreign affairs, right? So there's a lot of debate around it. I don't know if people really understand it. So just very, very quickly, I'm not gonna do like a whole quick chat on you right now, but there are some things that I wanna get out there. Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she said fracking is bad, right? It is. Fracking is horrible for the environment. It's really, really bad. So I don't know if you guys know even what fracking is, but basically there's rock underground. It's like this shale rock, and then you drill into it horizontally, and then you basically, you kind of explode it. So it becomes like this. And then you can extract all the natural gas that lives in between those cracks, right? The problem with this is the chemicals that they need to extract those gases are highly toxic. Like they're carcinogenic, they're radioactive, some of them, and they pollute the water that's used in the fracking. So it's not like you can recycle the water. They're polluted, it pollutes the water so badly that you can't even get rid of the chemicals in a chemical treatment plant, right? So that's part of it. So people argue that natural gas is better for the environment than oil is. But whenever you consider the environmental impact of extracting the fracked natural gas, that's where it kind of balances out. So either way, it's really, really bad for the environment and for people's health, right? Like I live in Houston, Texas. There are refineries, there are gas flares. These are regular things that we're used to seeing. And a big part of the problem with fracking is that it encroaches on private property, right? And there's not a lot of regulation in this industry. So literally down this street from where I'm sitting right now, over there, there was like a huge fireball in somebody's house, you know, and it's from natural gas flaring, and it's getting so close to these neighborhoods. This is a brand new neighborhood that I'm in right now. Wow. It's insane. It's literally like around the corner, John. So there's a lot of bad about it. The reason why I think Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are not pro just banning fracking altogether is because of some of the more conservative arguments for it. But I think that they do have a little bit of merit, right? So like I said, the United States is energy independent because of fracking and because we've been able to do offshore drilling and things like that. So our dependence on foreign oil is nil, you know, next to nothing, which is great because as I think is well known information at this point, the reason why the Middle East is so screwed up is because we did it, you know, us and a few other major players, and all of it, whatever nuances over there, it all comes back to oil, right? That's why we're there. That's why we're still there. That's why we won't leave, right? And now it's incredibly unstable. So that's one pro of fracking. So I think that there is a decent case to be made to be anti-fracking, but maybe pro-fracking for now as a means of, you know, sustaining our energy independence as we transition to a Green New Deal, or at least just better regulations of this industry. There aren't really a whole lot right now. More sustainable energy sources definitely needs to be in the future. There's no question about that, but I think that's maybe would help explain why they will keep fracking. Does that help?
Yeah, look, that's a great explainer. I appreciate you doing that. Sometimes when talking about things like this, I sort of just assume that we've talked about it so many times that I don't need to explain it, but you're 100% right. Every day new people start paying attention to this sort of thing. So I appreciate you doing that. It was a great explanation. I think the issue is that while I agree that that is the way fracking is talked about as a transition fuel, that is, look, if you're generating your power off of natural gas as opposed to coal, that is technically cleaner, although not as clean as they often talk about. Something like 3.5% of all of it is released into the atmosphere, and it is just devastating. But the issue is that I have noticed a lack over the past decade and a half when we've transitioned to having so much natural gas. It doesn't really feel like a lot of the senators and reps who are pushing it are now like, okay, good, now let's get to transitioning away from even that. They seem to have mostly just sat down on the natural gas and said, this is cool. Yeah. But I agree, hypothetically, it could go in that direction. Mike Pence, who lied constantly, he was honest about one thing at the very least. He said at one point, Senator Harris, you're entitled to your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts, a line that is used way too often. It's not nearly as clever as it was 50 years ago when it was first used. But you yourself said on multiple occasions when you were running for president that you would ban fracking, which is actually true. Back when she was running in the primary, she said, there's no question, I'm in favor of banning fracking. The issue is though, as sort of a gotcha, okay, she was in favor of it. she's not running for president, Joe Biden is, and Joe Biden doesn't want to ban fracking. So look, I want him to. I think she's wrong now. I think he's always been wrong about this. But it's a weird thing to try to say that because the VP once believed it. And I will say one other thing about this. Insofar as a person running for president and their VP pick disagree on something, we have this weird thing where the VP has to pretend that they don't disagree and in fact never did. When it seems like maybe you could turn a few of the people who naturally look at American politicians and say, you're all a bunch of greaseballs and I hate you and I hate this entire thing. Just say this, I disagree with Joe and I might try to push him in the direction of my views, but he's the guy in charge, so he's gonna decide. Why not be honest about the fact that you disagree? Why not be honest for once in your political lives? But they're not gonna do that. They're not gonna do that.
This is one of the things that drives me crazy when watching these debates, and I understand that there are time constraints to be considered, but it's so easy just to say as much as what you just said, John, right? And I don't know why they don't just do that. I think right now cancel culture is a big deal in our country, so I think people are afraid of being canceled, saying the wrong thing. But I never really subscribed to the idea that whatever you say is not, you can't change your mind later, especially when you're presented with new information, right? And then to your point, it's important that she says that she was against fracking and that Joe Biden is not, but maybe I can help move him in one direction. Because that's why we have a diverse ticket, right? That's why you put her on the ticket. That's why the rest of us wanted her on the ticket, whoever actually wanted her there, you know. But that's what needs to happen, you know. I don't think that people are beholden to what they said, you know, a few months ago, a few years ago. I think that if they have a change of heart, they can explain that to the people, explain why, explain what they learned, what new information came about because of it. And then, you know, go from there. That's how it's supposed to go. It doesn't always, but it's supposed to.
Exactly. And I just wanted to say one thing. I mentioned this on our coverage last night. There are a couple of potential explanations for why the Democrats want to be very clear. We're never going to ban fracking. We're never going to talk about it. It's never going to happen. One explanation is that it's politically bad for them to say that they're going to ban it. But I want to make clear that based on the polling that's available, that is by no means a settled thing. We had one poll that showed nearly 46% of respondents said they'd back restrictions to prohibit fracking. Of that figure, 32% said they strongly favored a ban on fracking. A full 1/3 of people responding strongly favored a ban. Just over 33% opposed banning fracking. 22% said they strongly opposed it. So you have not only more people saying ban it than don't, but more people strongly want it banned than strongly want it not banned. And there was a January 2020 poll specifically in Pennsylvania, one of the places where hypothetically, you know, they might be really sensitive about it. 48% were in favor of a ban, 39% opposed. And look, we have to acknowledge, do you feel like there has been a multi-year campaign to get people all jazzed about banning fracking? I don't think so. And yet already the American people lean towards banning the practice. What if someone was actually making the case, those numbers would be even further in the opposite, in that direction. So if it is political fear of some sort of strike back against the candidate who pushes it, there just isn't strong evidence that that would actually materialize.
Yeah, so one of the big pushes to keep fracking is all the jobs that would be lost because of it. But the thing is, the government subsidizes fracking and oil drilling and things like that. They're paying people for the use of their land, so people are making money off of it. The trade-off is, obviously, these are bad jobs. They're hurting the environment, they're hurting the planet, they're hurting us as individuals. And the trade-off just isn't there. And I think the majority of the American people understand that these environmental concerns are not anything to scoff at, especially not at this point in, you know, the history of the planet, really. This is a really pressing issue that needs to be addressed. At the very least, right now, we need really a lot more stringent regulation on the industry, and then hopefully a push towards cleaner energy. But as you mentioned earlier, whether or not that happens is yet to be seen.
We'll see. I mean, hopefully Biden gets in, hopefully Biden can be pushed on it. Kamala Harris is a woman, and she is always also a black woman. And for those reasons, the like needle that she had to fit through in this debate to not be criticized as being overly aggressive, overly abrasive, any of those things was incredibly narrow. I think that while, look, I had criticisms of her performance, she wasn't any of those things. She wasn't interrupting Pence constantly. She wasn't abrasive or aggressive or angry or literally any of those things. But that's not gonna stop the right wing from saying it anyway. So we're gonna give you some of their reactions. But before we go to them, personally, I'm far more interested in Yasmin's view of her performance than of the right. So what do you think both about how she performed and how the media was likely to respond to the way that she performed?
Well, first I will clarify a statement that you made. She's a black and Indian woman. So
yes,
just wanted to give her props for that.
Totally.
You know, I saw a tweet this morning and I can't remember who it was from, I'm sorry. But they were saying, you know, I wonder if males and white people understand the tricky balance that she's striking right now on the stage, trying to basically make this other guy comfortable enough to even listen to her and be in the same room with him. And look, I've been a woman of color for my entire life, right? And from the minute that I started working when I was, what, 18 years old in college, working retail, you learn very quickly that even if you're in the room, you still have to fight to get your voice heard. You know, if you're a female who has anything good to say to anyone, you have to first appease the people in the room so that they're comfortable with you even saying something, let alone being there, you know? So, you know, you learn to deal with it. I had to learn how to carry myself differently, how to do my hair and makeup better, you know, so it's more socially acceptable for people, but God forbid I spend too much time on either of those things, right? We're held up to so much scrutiny that we have learned to deal with it, and we are actively dealing with it. We are experts, and most people don't even realize what we're doing. I did get caught one time doing it. Somebody saw my face change, like as soon as I got what I wanted from them, and they called me out on it. So. But it's a real thing, you know, like you learn as a female that if you say something with a smile, you know, and you know, a higher pitched voice, that people are more willing to accommodate you and to do what you're asking of them. Whereas if I spoke in a lower timbre of my voice, not so much. You know, if I was direct the way that I feel like I naturally am, it's not gonna get me as far as if I was like, oh, hey, can you help me out with this? You know, it's a real thing.
No, I totally understand that. You know, I hope you feel free, at least on this show, to speak in whatever voice you want to or actually have. Yeah. I tried the same thing myself. But I also wanted your opinion. So that's on the one side. That's Kamala Harris for all of the reasons, and thank you for adding additional context. All of those reasons that she's gonna be dissected and picked apart and all of that. On the other hand, you have Mike Pence, who is not just a white male, but he's literally the whitest person I've ever seen in my entire life. So he just steamrolled the moderator. Like he was polite, he kept saying thank you, but he said thank you as he spoke over her over and over and over again and refused to answer her questions. That personally bothered me. I don't know, what did you make of his performance?
It was about what I expected from him, unfortunately. And even, you know, yeah, with his interactions with the moderator, even his interactions with Kamala Harris, you know, he said he was honored to be on the stage with her. You know, he's very polite. A lot of people are nice people because they can portray a nice person. It's not hard to smile at people. It's not hard to say please and thank you. It's not hard to do all these things that decent people are expected to do. But at the end of the day, if you're not actually a decent person, that will still come out. It'll still come through. So you can't fool people as easily as you think you can. At least not as many people as you think you can. I think some people still get fooled, but I don't know why again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, look, I was certainly bothered by it. You know, I had heard that before this debate, they were gonna respond to the first one by giving the moderator the ability to mute mics. They apparently decided not to do that. To literally mute this mic would have been a start. And so again, it was kind of a sham debate because they had rules, but only sort of. He didn't have to abide by them. And so I was a little bit frustrated with the moderator, but the moderator apparently wasn't given the tools necessary to make this a manageable thing. So he talked over her over and over and over again. And in the immediate media coverage of the debate, Rick Santorum, who for some reason is brought on to cable news to analyze these sorts of things, apparently took issue with that characterization of him talking over the moderator and decided to do some of it himself, as you'll see.
Head, and I think that women watching that, I mean, they have a huge gender gap, but women watching that are going to say, wait a minute.
Don't make the claim that he interrupted her repeatedly, because he didn't interrupt her repeatedly.
Well, he did.
He interrupted the moderator and her.
He continued answering questions beyond her time.
I need another minute not to answer that question.
He actually did interrupt her.
He went on really long. Not more than you would see in any other debate.
Okay, so I believe it's Gloria Borger. She was the only woman on that panel. And as she was explaining that he had been interrupting women, Rick Santorum interrupted her to explain that he hadn't been. I just thought that was great. You know, I don't often talk about Rick Santorum, but I think we should at least point that out.
It's just so typical, especially from Rick Santorum. You know, I don't think he's ever been better than that. But it is very typical. Mm-hmm. And I think I read somewhere that he was counted as interrupting her, I think 16 times compared to her interrupting him 8 or 9 times. I don't remember exactly the numbers, but yeah, he did. I mean, you just watch the debate, he did. Not as bad as Trump and Biden, but that's a very low bar to be setting. So, I mean, at the end of the day, he's still interruptive.
Yeah, and that's interrupting her, which obviously you don't want that. But him constantly interrupting and talking over the moderator, I personally saw that to be a way more pervasive problem. I think that it had a bigger effect on the flow of the debate. Mm-hmm. And I just really hope that if there is another debate, which we'll get to, it doesn't look like there might be, that they come better equipped to deal with it, just at least a little bit. Now, we talked about on our coverage last night, Cenk at one point said that we were responding to Frank Luntz's focus group. It was 13 undecided voters, 9 of them male for some reason. And the words they used to characterize Kamala Harris were almost universally negative. And you know, while I had issues with her performance, the issues was not that she was unpresidential and abrasive and mean or a monster like Donald Trump said this morning. None of that is true. And we found that to be pretty depressing about just looking ahead to how America is going to characterize virtually any woman in politics. Like, she worked the entire time to make them comfortable, and still they viewed her as being some sort of angry monster. And so let me give you a few examples. Dave Rubin, formerly of our network, said she is vile. She was vile. Did you watch this debate? Didn't find her to be vile. Ben Shapiro said, Pence absolutely wrecking Harris on Biden's economic plan here, and her smirking isn't helping, because of course they have to talk about her smile. Ian Miles Chunk, nope, not even reading that. Screw him. Dana Loesch says, Harris rudely bites Pence's head off. She already looks rattled next to Pence's calmness. And Harlan Z. Hill, who I think was actually a teddy bear at one point that was animated by dark magic, said, Kamala Harris comes off as such an insufferable lying bitch. Sorry, it's just true. He goes on Fox News constantly, and he just tweeted that she's being an insufferable bitch because she smiled at Mike Pence as he interrupted her.
I don't even know what to say. I think I'm speechless. You know, it kind of goes with a lot of what I've already said, but I mean, there's nothing. I watched the whole debate. I don't know how she could have done better than she did as far as, you know, conveying her points while also fighting off interruptions from Mike Pence, while also having to clarify a lot of the things that were coming out of his mouth about their stances on things. And oh my God, I did feel for her. I even felt for the moderator a few times. You know, I feel like she did make an effort at some point. She could have done a better job, but I don't envy that position at all. But as far as Kamala, there's kind of this idea that the president and vice president are supposed to be everyday people, you know, and so people are, I guess, offended or threatened by intelligence whenever it's there. And this is something that the Democrats specifically hear a lot in their performances and things like that. And it's unfair. I don't want me to be president. I want someone smarter and more experienced than me to be the president. You know, I don't know why that's not a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, America decided decades ago that we're going to vilify intelligence, the quest for intelligence, academia, expertise of any kind, even the doctors in 2020. We are just naturally suspicious of and hostile towards people who care to know things or act on their knowledge.
Oh yeah, and then Pence did mention a few times how, you know, we're gonna listen to the science. I'm like, since when? Like, you've never listened to the science. You actively don't listen to the science. Didn't Trump say the other day that science doesn't know? Like, he said that. So,
like he would know.
Yeah.
Yeah, his answer on the climate was an absolute embarrassment, and it's an embarrassment with a lot of risk of continuing on as official American climate policy if they get reelected. Last night was the VP debate. Next week was intended to be the second debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, but Donald Trump getting coronavirus obviously is a cause for concern in that. Not for him, he doesn't care if he exposes people to this fatal illness, but for people like Joe Biden who don't want to catch it, they don't necessarily want to be in the same room with him, which is why it wasn't super surprising when the Commission on Presidential Debates announced this morning that the next debate would continue, but it would be a virtual debate. It would be at the moderator and the town hall audience would be at one location. Joe Biden and Donald Trump would be at other locations, which seems reasonable. Donald Trump apparently didn't think so. Here is how he responded to that news this morning on Fox News.
I'm looking forward to doing the rallies. I heard that the commission a little while ago changed the debate style, and that's not acceptable to us. I beat him easily in the first debate, according to the polls that I've seen, but I beat him easily. I felt I beat him easily. I think he felt it too. He wouldn't answer any questions, and he had the protection of Chris Wallace all night long. It was just, I thought Chris Wallace was a disaster, but I beat him in the first debate. At the second debate, we have a never Trumper as a host, but that's okay because I beat him in the second debate also. But I'm not going to do a virtual debate.
So, Mr. President, you're not going to do it because the CPD, the Commission on Presidential Debates, announcing this morning that the second presidential debate will be virtual. Are you saying you're not going to participate?
No, I'm not going to waste my time on a virtual debate. That's not what debating's all about. You sit behind a computer and do a debate. It's ridiculous. And then they cut you off whenever they want.
That's probably the part that he has the biggest issue with, is that he would not be able to steamroll
the
moderator.
Yeah.
Totally. Well, so what do you think about that?
That was a ridiculous interaction. That was crazy. I hadn't heard the soundbite until right now. I'd read about it, but I didn't hear it. It's crazy. I mean, first of all, we already know that he's a dodger. He likes to dodge things. He doesn't like to accept responsibility for things. We already know that he put so many people, including Joe Biden and his team, in jeopardy by going to the first debate. Didn't they say that he already knew he had coronavirus at that time? And he just didn't tell anybody?
They've been asked many times to clarify when his last negative result was so that we can figure out if he knew, and they will not answer that question.
That's
straight.
What it was.
They will not
give
us the answer.
Yeah, which is insane, you know. And even with this vice presidential debate, whenever Kamala Harris wanted plexiglass barriers and the Trump campaign, they acted like she was being ridiculous. Even like, this is after we knew that Trump had coronavirus at the debate. Like, I don't understand it, you know. So it's not surprising. We already knew that he was going to try to get out of the second debate somehow. I don't know what polls he's looking at either that said he won in a landslide, but I guess those are his Trump polls. I know he always has different numbers than the rest of us do. So,
yeah. He also mentioned there that he won the second debate against Biden. No, but dude, we're talking about the second debate. It hasn't happened yet. Is the dexamethasone getting to your brain? What are you talking about? But yeah, he says that he won. I forgot that in 2020, you just say whatever you want to be true. Unrelated. Did everyone know, you know, Fox and Friends, it's like big, it's got a big audience. More people watch The Damage Report every day than Fox and Friends. It's like 10 times as many people. Did you know that?
Wow.
It's not true, but I like to say it. So why not? Why not? More people watch us than Tucker Carlson. Everything's coming
up,
Johnny.
Go with it. Yeah, I like it. Sounds good to me.
Imagine if you just lied about everything. Why would you do it? But anyway, okay, so he says he doesn't want to do it. He says that he beat Biden. He didn't beat Biden. None of the polls show that. And the polls outside of the debate, like the actual national election polls, improved for Biden after the debate. Here's the thing. Biden would be perfectly happy to debate Donald Trump because the precedent is that he can do quite well against him. And Biden doesn't need the debate nearly as much as Donald Trump does. Biden's already winning. Trump is the one that needs something that's going to shake up the polls. So it's just a weird choice to run from it. I don't know.
I mean, I don't really know what other option he has. I don't think that a second debate would actually help him at this point. And somewhere under all of the grandstanding and the ego and the narcissism, I think he probably knows that. I would hope so.
So here's the thing. That was the big breaking news. Trump is running away from the debate. There have been a couple of added wrinkles since then. So first, you had Joe Biden responding to this news. Let's take a look at what he had to say.
We don't know what the president's gonna do. He changes his mind every second. So for me to comment on that now would be irresponsible. I think that if I'm gonna follow the commission recommendation, if he goes off and he's gonna have a rally, I don't know what I'll do.
Yeah, so I think that's fair. It's a weird thing for Trump to do, so he was a bit thrown aback. Now, the interesting thing is that not long after that video, in fact, we were just about to go live, the Biden campaign put out a statement that said, okay, so if there's not gonna be a debate, we are gonna do some sort of town hall of our own, which seems fair. If Trump is gonna do it, he should do it. Then after that came out, the Trump campaign manager, Bill Stepien, who also has coronavirus because none of them are responsible about this, issued a statement saying that if they were to delay the debate by a week, so that they can do it in person and Trump will have flushed out coronavirus, he'll do it then, in which case they would then have to push back the third debate by a week so that it would happen just 4 days, maybe 5 days before the election. So who knows, maybe there's gonna be a debate. Again, Trump needs it more than Biden does.
Yeah, and you also have to consider the early voters. You know, Texas starts voting next week, and I feel like I've been working so hard to inform people this far, and then it's like I'm running out of time now. You know, there's still so many things that need to be talked about. And these debates are very, very close to the election. A lot of people, I think, probably already have their minds made up, but some people still need that clarification on certain issues and stances for each of the candidates. I like the idea of doing a town hall, especially for Joe Biden, because I think there are some things in his policy that he needs to clarify. I think for Trump, he hasn't really given a plan for anything. He just keeps saying things, whether or not they're true. And he gives no factual evidence or proof or any kind of plan that's laid out. Like we have nothing, right? I also don't think that the people voting for him care to know. They don't care. Yeah. They're gonna vote for him anyway. If they wanted something more concrete, they would have asked for it back in 2015, 16. So they didn't ask for it then. I can't imagine that they want it now.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I agree. I feel much the same as you. There's some things that I would really like to know. Honestly, when Biden was asked at the first debate about what changes he would make to the nation's response to coronavirus, I found his answer to be kind of unsatisfying, unspecific at the very least. I have no doubt that he would do a better job, but I would like some specifics. But every week, as Yasmin pointed out, more and more people have already voted. I mean, Ken Bone is still undecided. Maybe we're making a play for the Ken Bone vote, but that's pretty much it, I guess, at this point. Pete Buttigieg did something today that I loved, kind of. I'm obviously not a huge Pete Buttigieg fan, but he's apparently been going on Fox News, which is always a weird decision to make. He went on Fox and Friends this morning, and he appears to have confounded Steve Doocy. So I want to show you this video where Pete Buttigieg does a good job.
Well, it's too bad. I don't know why the president's afraid to participate in a debate. You know, all of us have had to get used to virtual formats, right? I mean, parents are having to deal with e-learning, which in some cases, is not what we're used to. I mean, we're having to take meetings over Zoom. It's not something I think most of us enjoy, but it's a safety measure. And I think part of why the US is falling behind, is badly behind the rest of the developed world on dealing with the pandemic, is because every time there's been a choice between doing something in a way that's more safe or less safe, right, this president seems to push for less safe. I think it's also probably a reflection of the weakness of his campaign. When you see campaigns getting the kind of bad news that he's been getting through this month, a lot of times you'll see these kinds of increased arguments over rules, withdrawing from opportunities, a little bit of flailing there. And it's too bad, because I think, yeah, the more the American people can hear two candidates side by side, even if it's virtual, sure, the better. Of course, the only reason we're here in the first place is that the president of the United States is still contagious, as far as we know,
right,
with a deadly disease, which reflects the, right, the overall problem. And I don't know why you would want to be in a room with other people if you were contagious with a deadly disease and you care about other,
sure,
people. But maybe the president doesn't care about other people.
Oh my God.
She kept like a bit. Stop, please stop. Please, my audience is not prepared for this. They don't want to think about the fact that he's sick and that he's willingly spreading it to other people. That was pretty good.
That last line, I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't expecting it. That was great.
Yeah, and look, Pete Buttigieg, I find him to be a fairly slimy politician. I don't like some of his absolutely massive flip-flops from previously supporting some progressive priorities to during the race, you know, running from them as fast as he can. And I don't even think he's necessarily a great communicator, but there he just sort of steamrolled Steve Ducey. He gave the Fox audience uncomfortable truths that they have spent the last 7 months sort of avoiding about how severe this pandemic actually is, and thinking long and hard about Donald Trump and what he's been doing since he got infected. It's on Fox Business, Lou Dobbs said something about the fact that Biden didn't want to debate on stage with Donald Trump. And Lou Dobbs said, with the president and then he stopped. He didn't say the word infected. He said, still able to spread the China virus. Wow. Like, they won't even say Trump has coronavirus. He's infected with it. It's still in his system. Like, I guess that's just too uncomfortable for their audience to really digest. And so they've sort of protected them from it a little bit.
Yeah, well, he's, you know, it's like North Korea, you know, he is the most virulent, you know, specimen of a man that anyone could ever hope for. And he came out of the womb that way, you know. So you can't lose that image of him, at least his supporters, you know, who for some reason think he's like a man's man. You know, he's the epitome of health and strength and masculinity, which I don't see it, but I guess they do, whatever. As far as Pete Buttigieg, though, I think he might actually be a good option as a surrogate to go on Fox News. It's like what you were saying, it's an interesting choice, you know, but I think it is an important step in kind of bridging the gap, kind of maybe getting some of those Fox watchers over to a more liberal side, maybe even a more progressive side. I feel like that's asking a lot, but you know, and maybe his flip-flops, which none of us liked, you know, I don't trust the guy, but maybe his flip-flops have endeared him to a more Republican, but not terrible base, you know? So maybe he is a good option to talk to these people.
Maybe, maybe.
Like a low barrier to entry.
Yeah, maybe. And he looks like the sort of politician they might like. He's white. And he looks sort of, he doesn't look scary or intimidating. He looks vaguely like a ventriloquist dummy, but he's not a dumb guy. And those lines were well delivered. I don't know, maybe he could, maybe as you say, maybe this could be his role and he could win back at least a little bit of goodwill from the Democratic primary.
Yeah, that remains we'll see. We will see. I don't trust his motives either, but you know, at the end of the day, if the result is positive, then I'll take it.
Totally, and you're 100% right not to. I mean, he's still very young. I think he's younger than me, actually. And so he did incredibly poorly in the Democratic primary. I mean, he did well in Iowa for obvious reasons, and not well elsewhere for obvious reasons. But he's young, and so I don't know. Maybe he's thinking gets into the Biden administration. You know, he timed his withdrawal from the race to try to give a boost to Biden. I doubt he did that just out of the goodness of his little heart. Yeah. And so, yeah.
Yeah, his motives are very, very questionable.
I think so. This is a true case of absolutely grievous insult to injury, and it has to do with the parents of those who were slain in the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. In case you don't know the details, that shooting back on February 14th, 2018 was among the most horrific in US history. 14 children and 3 educators died. Besides the 17 injured, many others at the school that day are suing for post-traumatic stress. And it probably shouldn't need to be added, but they're doing that for very obvious reasons. And if anyone has reason to have post-traumatic stress disorder, it would seem like people who survived one of the worst mass shootings at a school in American history would qualify. But apparently for some in positions of power in Florida, not necessarily so obvious. Now, parents and other victims are being asked to turn over their psychiatric records to prove they suffered mental anguish over the tragedy. The demand contained in documents filed in lawsuits blaming the Broward School District for failing to identify and stop the threat posed by gunman Nicholas Cruz has families of the victims enraged. In formal court responses, school board member Lori Alhadoff, whose daughter is one of those killed, called the demand harassing, burdensome, and an invasion of privacy. At least a dozen other families also objected, according to court records. Now, there's a lot of other records that they're being asked to provide, But I can't think of much that's more private than the psychiatric records of survivors of the mass shooting and their families that are attempting to process this horrific event. That just seems way beyond the bounds of any reasonable response.
I don't talk a whole lot about mental health because it's not something that I'm personally very familiar with, but everything that's happening this year alone, like let's just take 2020 for now, in a bubble, everyone is suffering in some way, whether or not we realize it or not. Like the other day I was in bed and then I was like, what is this? Like, am I depressed right now? It like things wear you down, right? And so I can't even imagine what it's like to go through something as acute and, you know, life changing as a school shooting, especially the one that the kids in Parkland had to witness, and their families, you know, not just the victims themselves, not just the students, but the families that are involved, the educators that are involved, the whole community really, and I mean by extension the rest of us. But it sucks, and it really is lacking in compassion, lacking in empathy, and it's just pushing a pro-gun agenda at the expense of everything else, at the expense of the lives of children, which is one of the most despicable things I can think of.
Yeah, it's needlessly cruel. And you know, from what I have available to me right now, I can't yet say, is this a sort of bureaucratic, inhuman cruelty that just happens in government where, just give us the information? Or is this specific cruelty targeting them? They've been the targets of specific targeted cruelty since that terrible day. So I don't know for sure, but I hope, and one of the reasons that we're talking about the story today is that public pressure as a result of this move will cause them to retract these insane demands. I mean, they're asking for things like the slain victims' cell phone numbers, copies of death certificates, all of the information, the names and business addresses of the victims' health providers, including their dentists, going back 5 years prior to the shooting. At some point, you know, I don't know if this is intentional or an oversight, but you're ghouls. You're just ghouls and you need to back off. And hopefully public pressure can lead to that, because these people have already been through far more than anybody should ever be expected to be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yasmin, thank you so much for joining us. It was great to have you on. I very much value your perspective. Where can people see more of your work?
The easiest place to find it all is on Instagram. I'm more active there than anywhere else. And my videos are also up on YouTube. My Instagram handle is YAZZZZZK, Yaz K. That's me. So,
nice.
And I have actually, the last time I was on the Common Room with J.R. Jackson, he requested a video from me, and that will be up later today. It's already filmed, ready to go. And it's about the 1619 awesome project.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And yeah, definitely deserved coverage considering the way that the Republican Party has spent the past few months lying about it.
Yeah,
so everyone, if you go to YazK with 5 Z's right now, you'll see it when it pops up. So thank you for that. And always thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.